Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Vacation. I'm looking forward to this evening's discussion, ladies and gentlemen, with you and all of the folks who are in our chat room tonight. As always, we're brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a collection of really great Americans, patriots who believe that the core values of this nation, honesty, integrity, individual liberty with individual responsibility, free markets and competition, and the ability of cream to rise, are the things that we will leave as a legacy behind us, for our children and their children and the entire world. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is on the latest end run around the Constitution performed by our current inhabitant of the White House. I don't know whether any of you have heard of the core curriculum or not. If you have, don't feel that you've been stupid or not paying attention or whatever, because even the people who put it together, when they did a poll, found out that 75% of the likely American voters, or likely Americans at all, didn't even know what the heck they were talking about, let alone have an opinion about it. Anyway, I'd like to start off tonight's show with an article from the Washington Times. It's an op-ed piece. It was written by a gentleman named Robert Holland, who is a senior fellow for education policy with the Heartland Institute, which is a conservative organization founded, I believe, in 1972 or 92 or something of that nature. And what they do is basically look for and try to advise on policies using the free market to address social and economic problems and concerns. This article came from the Washington Times, Monday's edition, July 23rd, 2012. So right now I'm quoting Mr. Holland, which could give you a fair idea of what's going on with this latest wonderful gift to the American educational system. Next standards for math and English, called Common Core, are poised to hit public schools across the nation. Some schools will begin implementing them as early as this fall, before parents have any inkling what has happened to their children's classroom instruction. Parents will not know how or why the nationally prescribed curriculum came about, or how to change it if they don't like it. That undoubtedly sounds similar to the famous assertion of former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that Congress would have to pass the Affordable Care Act for people to know what's in it. The nationalized Common Core for Education is like Obamacare in ripping control over critical, life-altering decisions from those most affected. Achieve, a band of like-minded corporate moguls that formed in 1996 to push national education standards, had to report rather sheepishly last month that its own poll showed Americans are almost totally in the dark about the Common Core juggernaut. A remarkable 79% of registered voters know nothing, unquote, or, quote, not much, unquote, about what Achieve calls the Common Core State Standards. Another 14% said they knew, quote, some, unquote, and just 7% claimed to know, quote, a lot, unquote. None of that is surprising. Those standards for teaching English and mathematics were put together behind closed doors, starting in 2009 by, quote, experts, unquote, assembled by resident bureaucrats of the Washington-based Council of Chief State School Officers and the National Governors Association. In 2010, even before a final draft had been made public, the Obama administration began pressuring states to commit to the Common Core in order to be eligible for a slice of the $4.5 billion Race to the Top fund carved out of the federal stimulus. More recently, the U.S. Department of Education made adoption of such, quote, college and career-ready standards, unquote, one of its many conditions for granting states No Child Left Behind waivers. Thus, any pretense of these being voluntary state standards went out the window long ago. All the more so because the Common Core now is linked to mandatory national tests that are being paid for by another $350 million in Obama stimulus bucks. Achieve had a headache remedy handy for the embarrassing lack of public knowledge revealed by its own pollsters. Write a glowing description of the Common Core and then ask folks again what they thought. After reading it, 77% of respondents said they supported implementation of the Common Core, a finding that Achieve then touted. This was a description the pollsters spoon-fed them. Quote, "These new standards have been set to internationally competitive levels in English and math. This means that students may be more challenged by the material they study, and the tests they take will measure more advanced concepts and require students to show their work." Unquote. That's a classic example of a pollster manipulating questions to obtain a result desired by an advocacy group. Remember, the description was for folks who confessed to knowing basically nothing about the Common Core. Suppose respondents had before them instead the following description. Quote, "Your local schools are about to start implementing standards and assessments developed by Washington-based interest groups and pushed by the federal government. These standards, known as the Common Core, have never been field tested, and your local school board has been unable to put them to a public hearing or vote. The national standards provide no process for states or localities to amend them. They will require students to take 4 federally subsidized tests a year, all of them via computer, and the results will be a factor in evaluating local teachers." Unquote. Given that factual statement, it is doubtful the desire to push forward with immediate implementation would have reached 25%. Would parents really trust behind-the-scenes forces to have total sway over their children's education if they knew they would be powerless to monitor the content of the lessons or the online testing? 46 states are on board with the Common Core. Only Alaska, Nebraska, Texas, and Virginia have chosen to stick completely to their own standards and thereby safeguard the rights of their citizens. In the compliant 46, local school systems are dutifully beginning the process of retraining their teachers to conform to the centralized system. When 90% of parents, taxpayers, and voters learn what is going on, perhaps the, quote, repeal and replace, unquote, battle cry won't refer only to Obamacare. And this is the end of Mr. Holland's op-ed piece. First of all, this, quote, unquote, implementation of anything to do with the curriculum could not have been done through the Department of Education. When the Department of Education was created by Jimmy Carter, it was specifically enjoined from in any way suggesting, adjusting, requiring, or even mentioning curricula to any public school in any state in the Union. There is nothing in the Constitution that specifically gives the power to educate our children to the federal government. That power is, as it should be, left in the hands of the states and the people. This end run around the Constitution is typical of our current administration. We will do anything to implement the Marxist socialist utopia that it envisions. I am not against standards in education, ladies and gentlemen. Far from it. My personal standards for my students are probably astronomically high, given what the usual watered-down curriculum looks like. However, I am a firm believer in limited government. I know from my reading of history that whenever one gives control over what is taught to the children of a society, to those whose main focus is remaining in power over that society is doomed. This is what Common Core, under the Obama administration, is intended to do. We need standards. We need to require our children to put forth an effort. We need to grade them honestly on their performance. We need to stop social promotions, and we need to eliminate the Department of Education permanently from federal bureaucratic lists. Our kids are this country's future. The function of education, ladies and gentlemen, under the current administration, is to indoctrinate our children in the "you didn't build that" philosophy of Marxist socialist equality. I would like to know what international standards they're measuring against for speaking English, for example. Whose English? The English of the heartland of America, standard broadcast Midwestern English, the English of Great Britain, the English of Canada, the English of South Africa, the English of Australia. Which international standard of English are we to be compared to? How are our teachers going to be retrained to meet this Common Core curriculum? So far, the implementation of this doctrine is limited to English and language arts and mathematics. Fortunately, mathematics is not usually subject to political ideology, except, of course, if you're a pollster stating the question so as to command agreement from people who have no clue whatever it is you're talking about. Understanding mathematics, number concepts, is essential for a citizen to be able to deal with monetary and commercial interests. Half the reason we had a housing crisis was because people couldn't figure out that an adjustable rate mortgage wouldn't stay at $112 per month for a $3 million house. We need standards, ladies and gentlemen, but we do not need standards imposed upon every single state and every single school from bureaucrats and business leaders and the Association of Governors that we have not had any opportunity to even look at. I spent the last week searching the internet trying to find anything that would tell me exactly what the specifics of these core curricula are. What skills are going to be expected? At what grade level? What methods of teaching are going to be required? How are we going to fit these Common Core standards and federally mandated standardized testing into the incredible oxymoronic Department of Education's mandate that all children must be taught as individuals at their own pace and with an understanding of their own strengths and weaknesses and still measure up to chronological standards of achievement? Again, we have the ideologues in both our educational institutions of higher learning and in Washington slipping into the fabric of our nature their failed Marxist socialist ideals under the guise of, we want everybody to be successful and we want everybody to know everything. No, they don't. They cannot retain power if everyone is successful because Marxism, communism, and socialism are generally not at all popular among those who have been successful within any given society. Very few people who have worked their happy little gluteus maximi off building something, a business, a profession, are willing to take what they have earned and hand it to somebody thousands of miles away to redistribute to who knows who and for whatever reason. Our nation has more people on food stamps, ladies and gentlemen, than we have ever had before. We have more people applying for federal disability as a means of getting an income. The person inhabiting our White House right now has gutted the welfare reforms put in place under Jimmy Carter that required people who were applying for welfare, Bill Clinton, not Carter, put in place under Bill Clinton that required people who were on public assistance to either be entered into a job training program, to work part-time, to do something to improve their skills so that they would not be permanently dependent. Our president wants his voter base permanently dependent because without the victim mentality, his power is gone, and so is the power of those who back him. The Common Core curriculum, in of itself, as an idea, is not a bad thing. We need to have a measuring stick so that our children are being given the very best education so that they can compete in a global economy and they can succeed and they can create, invent, improvise, and find new and better ways of doing things and improve this lovely old world we live in. But it doesn't come about behind closed doors and with an ideological agenda behind it. It does not come about by a so-called I believe in transparency president who does everything under the covers and then springs it on a Friday afternoon so everybody will ignore it over the weekend and forget it ever happened by Monday. We have right now a dangerous trend going on, not just in education, but in every aspect of American life. The Common Core curriculum is just one more little tiny eruption of the rash that is developing into a cancer. It's one more instance of an overreaching federal bureaucracy fueled by people who desire to eliminate individual liberty under the guise of bread and circuses and, oh, we're so compassionate and it's not your fault. The everybody gets a trophy mentality, the you didn't build that Marxist ideal, the nobody gets anywhere on their own, it takes a village. Wrecked. Not only is it disgusting, it is dangerous. One of the reasons we are and have been for a great many years a leader in the world is because we have always taught our children to rely on themselves. We have held them accountable for their behavior. We have given them every opportunity we could. Many people skipping and saving to send their kids to college, to private schools where their child would get a better education, to stay up late at night after a long work day to make sure little Junior understands how to do his fractions, to go to parent-teacher conferences and talk with the teacher, not at them. We have always invested in our future by investing in our children. All you have to do with Americans is to indicate that something might not be good for children, and they will leap to abolish it because we are protective parents. Children in America have an extended childhood. A much longer childhood than in any other country, developed or not. Our kids remain kids until they're 26 under Obamacare, in effect. Every other nation that's ever made anything of itself has not trained their children to be dependent babies until their mid-20s. And the fact that we live longer and more healthy lives is not a justification for living one-third of them as an ignorant, dependent infant. Family farms, where the kids helped on the farm, are dying out, and the death blow was handed them with new labor regulations that eliminated their ability for the kids on a family farm to work on their own parents' land. When I worked at a local business, we very rarely hired teenagers. We certainly did not hire children under 16, even with work permits, because the regulations of having them take a break every 90 minutes, making sure that they couldn't work on weeknights, and that they could only work a certain number of hours on Saturdays, made it impossible in the business that I worked in, which happened to be a combination of the racetrack and food service, to be able to rely on a 15-year-old to be able to do what was called upon for them to do. When I was a young woman, I worked for a while for a gentleman who owned a pizza parlor. And it was a family business. And yes, he built it. He was originally from Mexico. Was an American citizen, had been in this country for a very, very long time. I don't know whether he was born here or not. I don't think he was. I think he immigrated legally. when he was very young. Anyhow, his kids all worked in the pizza parlor. They made pizzas, they bused tables, they waited on tables, they rang up orders, they took phone orders, etc. They understood from the time they were about 14 and were big enough to stand behind the pizza counter and twirl a pizza that you had to work for your living. That if you wanted to make something of yourself, your effort had to go into it. Nobody was going to do it for you. Nobody was going to give you a paycheck if all you did was sit at the back of the restaurant and text your friends on your iPhone. Only in those days, we didn't have iPhones. Those kids, I'm sure, went on to be very successful citizens because they understood the core curriculum of the work ethic. The glowing description in the article that I read aloud a little while ago of what this core curriculum would be is unprovable. As I said, I have not been able to find anything out there for the public to look at on exactly what this thing is going to give or take away. My friend Ron said that the public policy that I was just describing is a major factor in our immigration problems, and he's right, it is. Unfortunately, we have a bunch of very spoiled babies in this country who turn up their noses at working behind the counter in a fast food restaurant or as a dishwasher in a restaurant or working on a farm or working in a nursery. And I don't mean a baby nursery, I mean a plant nursery. They might get their delicate little fingernails dirty. They also might actually have to know something, God forbid. They work in a fast food restaurant, computerized cash registers. They don't really have to know anything much other than to poke the right button, but God help us if the power goes out. As I said earlier, we do need standards. We need to hold to those standards. The irony in this article, I don't know whether any of you noticed it or not, but the irony in the article is this section right here. More recently, the U.S. Department of Education made adoption of such college and career standards one of its many conditions for granting states No Child Left Behind waivers. In other words, states who can't manage to get 90% of the kids in their public schools able to do their schoolwork or their school show their academic progress at the new higher levels required by No Child Left Behind will be able to get a waiver if they accept these new national standards instead of No Child Left Behind standards. If they take the core curriculum and teach what the government tells them to, they won't have to actually achieve anything. This new curriculum, somehow or other, is magically going to give them those wonderful numbers. And yet this new core curriculum and the standardized tests that are a part of it are going to be used to evaluate teachers as failures if the students don't achieve to the level that Big Daddy in Washington thinks they ought to. The ridiculous and absurd, convoluted practices this administration boggle the mind. And I say that advisedly because I'm beginning to think that there are a great many people in our dear beloved country who don't have a mind, or if they do, it's certainly rusted from disuse. Our children, ladies and gentlemen, are being taught by the abundance of federal aid that it's a lot easier to go out and get pregnant at 14 than it is to actually graduate from high school and go to work. And then when you find out that all that lovely federal aid isn't probably going to be able to clothe your baby in anything except thrift store materials. You got to go take a minimum wage job if you can find one with no skills in order to get a onesie that hasn't been worn by six infants before you. We have a horrible state of confusion in which our kids have to exist. We have teachers' unions that demand incredibly generous retirement at the expense of state services across the board. I want mine and I don't care about the rest of you. If that's the attitude of the person teaching your child, what is your child learning by example from this person? If our kids are told that you don't really have to know this because it isn't on the test, why are we surprised that they can't remember who the first president was or in what century the American Civil War was fought? This magic core curriculum that has been slipped into our public schools by intimidation and bribery, which is pretty much it. In other words, if you don't adopt this core curriculum, you won't get the money, honey. If you look at what has happened to our public education system in the last 20 years, how far we have fallen internationally in the ability of our kids to read, write, and speak their own language, do mental calculations above 1 plus 1 might be equal to 2, but I'm not sure, and have any vague idea about the history of their own country, let alone the world, and no grasp of a scientific fact like you don't mix ammonia and bleach unless you want to kill yourself. This new core curriculum is going to make them career ready? Yeah. Exactly how? I went to public schools, ladies and gentlemen. I attended private school, first through third grade, Catholic school. I went to public school from fourth grade through high school. I went for 1 year to a Catholic women's college, which would prepare anybody for life in a police state, and graduated from the University of Georgia in 1969. Yes, I'm old. I'm ancient. I'm doddering. I must be suffering from incipient Alzheimer's because I can't see the wonderful new Marxist utopia blossoming in front of my eyes. And I'm not running after our current president, touching the hem of his garment in hopes that I will all of a sudden attain eternal youth and live forever until I die. Well, my age has given me a small degree of experience. I hope a little bit of wisdom. And it has also taught me that there's no such thing as a free lunch. And that, no, we're not all alike. And I don't care whether the playing field is level or not. Some people are better at the game than I am or ever will be. And no, I don't believe that without government, nobody would achieve anything. No, I do not believe that it was the roads that made your business successful. And I do not believe in spreading the wealth around. And I do not believe in utopia. Utopia is a concept that has been pushed by the political left for over 100 years. It has been implemented, it has been tried, it has been experimented with, and every single time the utopian left has gotten their hands on the reins of power, individual freedom has died an agonizing death. Because you cannot get there from here. Kind of like my friend Rod's trip. It takes you places you don't know exist, and you're right, they don't. The core curriculum is, I guess the best way to describe it, is a lovely piece of candy that looks delicious and has those pretty little swirls on the top, and inside is strychnine. We need to have standards in anything, ladies and gentlemen. Personal standards of behavior and morality and ethics. Business standards of honesty and integrity and giving value for value received. Social standards of treating other people the way you wish to be treated. They are important. Educational standards are important. But they don't mean anything if they are not lived up to. Creating a new standard without actually seeing whether or not it can be achieved is ridiculous. This core curriculum, to my knowledge, has never been presented to the public. I have seen absolutely nothing about it. Now, granted, I am not omniscient. No, I'm not applying for the God job. As far as I know, there isn't a vacancy, and I don't want it anyway. So I can't claim omniscience. But I am interested. I educate myself. I am involved in education, both professionally and ideologically. And I learn stuff because I was born to. And when I learn things, I share. I asked a teacher friend of mine if she knew anything about it. And she didn't either. The basic standards that we use in our schools range and vary widely. In general, there is a broad perception that a child should be able to fluently read polysyllabic words by the time he or she completes the first 6 years of schooling. Roughly finishing up elementary school and starting middle school. There is a perception that students, by the time they graduate from high school, should be able to read classic literature, such as Shakespeare. They should be able to understand what I call survival math, operations of addition, multiplication, subtraction, and division with whole numbers, fractions, decimals, and percents. They should have an introduction to logical reasoning and equations, basic knowledge of algebra, some knowledge of geometry, particularly if they intend to go for higher education. They should be conversant with how to keep a checkbook. They should have enough knowledge of history to understand the origins of our nation, to understand its place in the world and the civilizations that have gone before it. They should have a reasonable knowledge of how our government works, what their rights and responsibilities as citizens are, why those rights and responsibilities are there. They should know what the Constitution is, what it does. They should be familiar with the documents of our founders, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Mayflower Compact, the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom, etc. They should have a working knowledge basic earth science, understanding how weather is generated, differences in climate depending on altitude, etc. They should have some understanding of biology, understand genetics, understanding human and animal reproduction. the basic taxonomical classifications. They should have an introduction to chemistry and understand the way that substances interact and the concept of an element and a compound and a mixture and a formula, etc. If they are intending to go for higher education, they should be acquainted with physics, understanding the formulaic idea of work and energy and so on and so forth, in order to be able to do the more advanced work that a college education would require of them. In general, those have been our core curriculum. My friend Bill just mentioned, now, how does an international standard perceive our government? Well, fortunately, we don't have to meet international standards in that yet, Bill. So we only have to meet international standards in English and math. Math, I could buy. English? But believe me, starting with math and English and language arts is just that, starting. They won't stop until they've implemented a core curriculum in science, history, civics and government, psychology, sociology, philosophy, etc. They already have a Marxist core curriculum in most of our major universities because that's where our teachers are trained. And that's where many of the ideas that generate movements like Occupy Wall Street originate. That's where our current president found his true home among every radical he managed to get his little happy paws on. It is perfectly natural and perfectly normal, ladies and gentlemen, for youth to be idealistic and to envision a utopian world. To believe that they can change things for the better. We need youth to feel that way. We need that optimism and that energy. But we must also temper it with age and the wisdom and the experience that we as adults have. The enthusiasm of youth is only dangerous when it's pandered to and used by unscrupulous political ideologues, which is exactly what's happening now. Youth, childhood, are incredible learning and growing times. They set the stage for future worlds. And we as parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, teachers, mentors, would love to be able to protect our kids from the bumps and bruises of life experience that will reduce the shine of those useful ideals and useful enthusiasm. We can't, ladies and gentlemen. As much as we would like to, we cannot protect our children from adulthood. There's a line from a song of the King and I where the king is talking about, if the lies are strong enough to protect me, might they not protect me out of all I own? And it's a very telling indictment of the current governmental philosophy in Washington. Our allies are protecting us out of all we own. Our benevolent, compassionate, leftist government is protecting us so well that soon we will be at the level of Bangladesh as far as standard of living, education, freedom, opportunity to succeed goes. Because we can't be allowed to be exceptional. We must be brought down. We must be lowered so that other people don't feel badly. The United Nations is not interested in promoting world peace, ladies and gentlemen. The United Nations is interested in promoting world poverty, with the benevolent UN overseeing who gets what part of the last crust of bread. The United Nations, in its original idea, was, like so many utopian ideas, a wonderful thought. A place where nations could sit down and talk out their differences. Rather than standing across a battlefield and shooting them out. But the United Nations, in practice, has proven to be exactly what every single human institution always does prove to be. Deeply flawed and not God. Whether you believe in God or don't believe in God doesn't matter to me. What does matter is when you believe you are God. Whether there is one or isn't one is immaterial. The only fact upon which I can firmly stand is that no human being currently in existence is God, no matter how wonderful they are, or how benevolent they are, or how compassionate they are. As human beings, we are inherently subject to the universe as we perceive it. We are not omniscient. We cannot see the ramifications of everything we do. We cannot guess the long-term effects of many of the things that we implement. It is when we assume that we can, it's when we assume that we are omniscient and use that as justification for seeking to become omnipotent, that human institutions fail. I am not a pessimist. As a matter of fact, I'm an inveterate Pollyanna, which drives my husband crazy. Believe me, when he says Pollyanna, he doesn't mean it as a compliment. But I am, along with being honest, pretty much a realist too. I tend to believe that human beings are capable of as much great good as they are of great evil. For every act, like the shooting in the theater in Colorado, of evil and carnage and death, there is an act of kindness and courage, like the blind man who traveled alone to attend Glenn Beck's Restoring Love. Or Christian Bale, on his own time, going to talk to the survivors of that massacre at the premiere of his movie. Not sponsored by the movie producers, not paid for by Hollywood, and not in a Batman costume, but asked himself to talk to them and hug them and tell them that he felt for them and their families. We can and do normal things. We can do and do incredibly evil things. Doesn't mean that we should ever give up trying to make ourselves better or make our societies and our nations better. But we can't do it by top-down, totalitarian, remove all choice so you can't make a bad one ideologues. And that's what we're facing now. The Common Core curriculum is a symbol and a symptom of what our current government wants to make us into. Not a nation of individuals who try and fail and get up and try again, who make horrible mistakes and discover wonderful things like the Salk polio vaccine. They don't want that. What they want is what I used to call communion soup. They want a pacified, comfortable, enslaved populace, which is so dependent upon government to fulfill all of their needs that even if they could think, they would be too afraid to, for fear that their comforts would disappear. There were many, many, many people, I'm sure, in Nazi Germany who hated and despised the Gestapo and the killing and the evil policies of the Nazis. But they were terrified to say anything that could be construed as criticism because then they and their families would die. They didn't believe when Hitler began his rise to power this is what they were going to get. He promised them hope and change, ladies and gentlemen. He promised that everybody would have equal stuff in everybody's house. He promised them that evil people would be gotten rid of and only the good people would be around so everybody would be happy. He gave them somebody to blame for all of the woes of their nation. And it was too late to go back when they figured out how he was going to make all the quote-unquote evil people disappear. Our new friend, Atheist Radio, in the chat room, said he didn't think many people knew about the atrocities while they were happening. Maybe a small number of insiders who helped run the underground saved some people. He's quite correct. There are lots of stories of Germans who helped Jews escape Germany. There's good own lives. One of those people was a woman who settled in, who lived in Austria, and who was turned down for the Nobel Prize in favor of I don't know what, but she should have received it. I cannot remember her name right off the bat, but I believe you could find her if you look on the internet. There are always those, even under the threat of death, find the courage to try to do what is right. There always will be. The human spirit produces angels and devils, ladies and gentlemen, and core curricula and national standards and top-down government and eliminating our choices, and you can't sell somebody huge soft drinks because you'll make them fat, and we ought to outlaw McDonald's, and let's not eat Chick-fil-A sandwiches because their CEO believes in traditional marriage and he's an evil homophobe. This kind of garbage stifles the human spirit. It does not allow it to grow. We know, all of us, that human beings are not carbon copies of one another. We are not clones. We are not blank slates that only require government to write upon us to be happy and enthusiastic about the wonderful things our government does for us. We all know that we are individuals, that no two of us are exactly alike in our life experience, our opinions, our talents, our skills, our interests. We are incredibly diverse as a species, and thank God for it. But the progressive left that is currently running our Senate, our White House, cannot, even if they believe it, cannot express this. Because if they do, their supposed tolerance is shown up for the sham that it is. The left's tolerance is far from tolerant. The left tolerates only that with which it agrees. any who express an opinion contrary to the leftist utopia are immediately vilified, isolated, denigrated, and marginalized. Anyone who espouses what the progressive left considers to be old, worn-out ethics and values, instead of the communion soup where everything's okay, there's no such thing as bad behavior, only communication we don't understand. We can't have that communion soup stirred up. We can't allow dissent, because dissent makes people unhappy. It makes them have to actually think. And when people start thinking, they might not be so eager to give us the power that we so enjoy having over them. So we must slip in every chance we get core curriculum that fits the progressive idea of tolerance and diversity. The progressive idea of tolerance and diversity is best exemplified by a young adult novel called The Giver. For those of you who have not read it, I highly recommend it. I won't go into detail, but it is set in a community in which everything happens at exactly the correct time for everybody. And everybody is equal in the present sense, which means alike. It's been a part of our core curriculum in 8th grade English for a couple of years now in the school where I teach. A great many of the students, I'd say at least 70% of them, don't get much out of it because they have already been through 8 years of progressive education in which thinking is strongly discouraged. Those of you out there who actually enjoy thinking, I believe, will find it illuminating. In one of the articles that I was reading lately, I forget who authored it, but they mentioned that we're living in Brave New World in 1984 and how right they are. With all of the preaching and rhetoric and pretty speeches about diversity and so on and so forth, and, oh, Malia would be unhappy with me if I should not want her school friends' parents, who happen to be a gay couple, to be married. And I can't have Malia unhappy with me, and I have to, you know, make sure she's happy with me. Well, that's fine. How you raise your children is your business. If that is truly what you believe, as I do, that what matters is how you treat others, I have no quarrel with it. But when you decide that government officials, elected officials, such as Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, and the object that happens to be currently mayor of Boston, decide that they can eliminate a person's ability to do business in their city because they disagree with his religious views, it reminds me very, very much of 1936 Berlin. And it scares me. And this core curriculum of diversity and compassion, and everybody gets a trophy and there's no bad behavior, etc., 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 has absolutely nothing to do with actual, real human diversity. It's a mask, ladies and gentlemen. A mask of, all-inclusiveness, multiculturalism, one-world government, sentient planet garbage. And our kids are going to be subjected to it unless we do something about it. Looks like I have a caller on the line, folks. Hang on a minute. We'll see who's calling in tonight. Hello there.
Oh, there we are. I got the beep. Hi, Terry. It's good old Linda in California.
I figured that was you. I recognize the area code. How's my California?
Pretty good. The weather's fabulous. I'm not kidding. I know you guys have humidity, but it's just beautiful here. That's the only thing good about California right now. But I wanted to share a quick story. When you talk about the curriculum, and it's such a heinous joke there. I mean, I can't even believe they're doing this. Like you said, throw more money at it and see if the stupid washing machine gets fixed with the money stuffed in the middle. I mean, I went to the store to buy some groceries about, a couple days after I got back into town from Indiana. So they had a new girl, and I sometimes like to get the fresh beef, and they got a nice meat counter and the whole thing. And anyway, so the butchers are back there, and they got this young girl about 18, maybe 19 years old, and she was waiting on the customer. She wasn't cutting the meat or anything like that, but I wanted a quarter pound of this particular ground beef. So she had to ask the butcher, because it's digital and it's going to say 0.25.
0.25, yeah.
She said, I could hear her asking this guy. I was like devastated and felt so sorry for her. It's probably not her fault. They don't teach him anything. He had to explain to her that it's 0.25 for that particular. I mean, it was my first real firsthand experience with the young ones coming out of, I guess, high school.
Scary, isn't it?
It's horrible. I don't blame the poor girl. I kind of blame the parents for not monitoring what's going on, you know. But the school system—it's horrendous.
Yes, ma'am.
Unbelievable.
I understand.
Devastating.
That's basically what I go through every single day.
I know.
Yeah. And unless you are involved in it in some way, either through PTA, volunteering in classes, with kids in school, either your own or family members, parents just don't recognize it. And part of it, there are so many factors, Linda, that contribute to this. The idea that somehow or other the most important thing for a child is to have the very latest iPhone and $300 sneakers so mom and dad both have to work.
I know.
Yeah. And the idea that, we'll hand it over to the professionals because they know how to do this. The city mentality that says, I'm not responsible for that. It's always somebody else's job. Jefferson was right. When you pile people on top of each other in cities, that's where leftist ideas have their breeding ground. Because the mindset is, I can't do it by myself. The same garbage that Obama spouted in Roanoke. Exactly the same thing. And anybody who has ever lived in a rural or suburban community, anybody knows that no matter how much you petition the government, if you put a tomato plant in the ground and walk inside, it's not going to have ripe tomatoes tomorrow morning if it was only an inch tall.
We were talking in the chat room about, all the garbage that's going on, and that we want to fight back, and that we thank God that this generation is informed, because with the financial collapse looming over our heads, things are going to get pretty ugly. And I do believe this generation was born at a time that it was on purpose. And you and I and the rest of the Patriot family people are so far ahead of the game as far as education. I believe, this is just my personal opinion, that because since we are, we're going to have to fix this, because if it's left up to the generation after us, we're really doomed. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Because they are totally ill-equipped to function as independent beings. They have been spoon-fed and babied and kept in perpetual infancy and promised through everything that they learn in school, that somebody else is there to take care of them, and that any time they make a mistake, they get a do-over, and that, oh, it mm-hmm. wasn't my fault, he talked to me during the test, or, oh, well, I know this is too hard,
that's
so you don't have to do it. Nobody's responsible for anything. It's not my fault.
Hard.
I have a disability. It's not my fault. I come from a broken home. It's not my fault. My mother was an unwed mother. It's not my fault. The dog ate my homework. Excuses.
The president ate my dog.
Yeah. My dog ate the president. Don't I wish, because I have got a dog. I don't know, though.
Well,
cat food is always needed. Of course, it might make him sick, and I love my kitties.
They'll eat it.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. I would not. I will not let my cats eat tainted food, dear. I will not.
I was saying that I thought about this a couple days ago, and I thought, I'm going to do this. Remember Jay Leno used to go out on the street, and he did jaywalking. I imagine he still does.
Oh, yeah.
Once in a while. So I'm putting together a list of questions, and I'm going to go to different areas and different demographics, and I'm going to ask these questions. I got about 16 written down. Let me
uh-huh.
give you a couple of them. Who is the current Vice President of the United States? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do it, since I don't have a recorder. I'm just going to write down their answers and tell them I'm not taking names or pictures or anything like that. But
uh-huh.
And then I can give you guys the answers that I get, or the deer in the headlights mm-hmm. look responses that I get. So that would be kind of fun to do. So,
oh, I think that's great. I'm looking forward to that. I sent out, when I sent out our the email to all of our members at Patriot Families today, I also forwarded it to a teacher friend of mine in hopes that she'd be able to listen in, and I'm hoping she'll be able to call in. She couldn't do it. She had a prior commitment this evening, but she said she plans on it before the end of the summer. So I'm hoping that she will give us a call, because I'd like an educator. And she is a conservative, and I would like her take on it.
Sure.
Particularly this core curriculum, because it's going to directly affect her, not me quite so much, because I'm
right.
not responsible for meeting specific standards or covering a certain amount of material in a given amount of time. But she is, and so are the teachers to work with. And they all, every single one of them cares about what they do, Linda. They really do. I'm very
yeah.
fortunate in that I work with a lot of people. We have a few who are pretty lackadaisical, and, you know, I teach because it's an easy job, and this way I get to go home with my kids kind of thing. But you have that everywhere. It goes back to what I said before, that human beings are not perfect. We have our flaws. We can be absolute angels, and we can turn right around and be as devilish as, you know, Mephistopheles if we wanted to. The key is that there's always a balance. And inevitably, great evil is counteracted with great good. You look at the
mm-hmm.
Roman Empire, and you look at the crucifixion and the Christian martyrs. You look at the Nazi Germany, and you look at the heroic coalition of nations on the Allied side, and how we rebuilt Germany almost single-handedly after we had resoundingly defeated an evil man.
Yes.
There's always something in the human spirit that triumphs over the devil side of us. You can't eliminate either the angel or the devil from human beings and make them into complacent pudding. It can't be done unless you give everybody in the world a frontal lobotomy. And believe me, I think the UN is making the list and setting up the operation times as we speak. Because lobotomy. Remember One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Mm-hmm.
I do. That Nurse Ratched solution is the UN. That's exactly what they want. They want a figurative frontal lobotomy, because you cannot achieve utopia with people in it. It's not possible. Utopia is only a pipe dream. No matter what you're smoking in that pipe, it's a pipe dream. It cannot be achieved. But they are going to find gullible young people who want to believe they can make life perfect, who are willing and enthusiastic to go copulate in a public park in the name of freedom and anti-capitalism.
God.
And have a great time doing it, because we're here for a cause, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think I was ever that young or that stupid. I truly wasn't.
God.
That whole movement passed me by, and I was in college at the height of it, because I graduated mm-hmm. from high school in 65 and college in 69. So, you know, right there, the whole bit. And yes. I was a conservative then. So my friends in college used to tell me I had a middle-aged mind. I took it as a compliment, even though they didn't mean it that way. But
you know, when you said the word gullible, it came to mind the show last night on Michael Savage, and he was talking about the idiotic speech. One of several of the POTUS, and he was, you know, spouting Marxist rhetoric and the anti-gun this and the, you know, and the main one was the "you didn't build that" nonsense, which is clearly Marx and Engels and, you know, Lenin. And he says, does this guy really think that everybody in America is that gullible? And so then he went to his break and he said, oh, well, gullible travels.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
Gotta love Savage. Anyway, well, there's bad things happening here in Anaheim. I don't know if I sent it to some of the folks on Patriot Families. They're having riots. It actually made the Union Tribune, which is, I don't know how far down the liberal rag scale they are, but it was actually a day late and a dollar short for the Union Trib here because I knew about it probably 24 hours before my mom did, and I didn't tell her about it because I didn't want to worry her, and she didn't realize how close Anaheim is to us. Well, the La Raza groups, and you know, they're protesting, and God knows what they're protesting, but they're literally anarchists, and the police are, you know, doing what they got to do and trying to get them off the streets because they're creating mayhem. So, because they become violent. That's all they have, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. So I said, Mom, they're just in the big cities. They're not going to come to people's homes. But because I had told her I was more concerned about the rash of home invasions in San Diego, and they haven't reached North Carolina.
Yeah, I had heard about those, too.
Yeah, lots of it. So I looked at my mom. I says, why do you think I have these weapons here? Not, you know, they're not just collecting dust. I says, I pray every night that I don't have to use them, but, you know, they're there in case I do. So, you know, it's
got a
amazing
gentleman in the chat room. I don't know whether you're looking at the chat room, but I just saw
not
the
yet.
Gentleman in the chat room who is busily saying that Obama is not a Marxist or a communist. And I think he is not clearly paying attention. He is. His whole upbringing and his whole viewpoint is Marxist. The whole redistribution.
Part of his DNA.
Yeah, it's the
From
each according to his ability, to each according to his needs philosophy. He says it every time. This whole you didn't do it by yourself. Aware that George Orwell was a socialist. Of course he was. I'm aware that George Bernard Shaw was one too. Communism had its roots in socialism. It was an adaptation of the idea of the government being the benefactor for all. Communism was the extension of that, which meant that government, the people as a whole, in effect, owned everything and no private property existed because it promoted an inequality of status. So it was an outgrowth of Marxism. Marxism, socialism, communism, Fabian socialisms, all of them stem from the same belief that utopia could be achieved if you eliminated the differences between people and you made it impossible for anyone to excel above the norm. Because if you did allow excellence above the norm, that meant that there would be envy and an unequal distribution of resources. And that is the basic fundamental principle. And yes, I do understand the history of Marxism, Mr. Carlton, and I hope you do too. Forgive me if I sound a little bit snappish, but shall we say that I am well aware of the history of most social movements, very many social movements, and I also understand how they developed and why they developed and how when they were put in practice, they inevitably failed. Because they did not take into consideration the nature of human beings. That is correct.
Right.
And no matter how much you would like people to think of themselves as one happy family, I am my brother's keeper, even Jesus couldn't make it happen all over the world.
You tell him, Terry.
Well, yeah, I just get a little bit tired sometimes, Linda, but I've heard all of this for about 35 years now.
Yep.
And, you know, it's the same tired rhetoric over and over and over again. It's the same wishful thinking, the same absurdity, the same illogic that says that taking human beings and turning them into happy dependents is going to make the world wonderful. It won't.
It's like watching an MSM video loop over and over.
Yeah, it is.
Ad nauseum.
Socialism and communism are not the same thing. No, they're not. You're quite correct, Carlton. However, they stem from the same ideology and the same apprehension of human nature, which is incorrect. They are both illogical because they both cannot exist within the reality of human beings. They are alike in some ways, but they are not the same, any more than Marxism is the same as socialism and communism. Every single one of them has its own peculiarity. Fascism is not the same as any of them either. But all four of those isms and ideologies require a huge, very repressive, very controlling governmental system so that individuals have very limited freedom. Individual freedom cannot exist under any of those systems. It can't, because the entire system collapses the minute individual freedom rears its happy little head.
It's usually accompanied by a very iron-fisted regime, and because naturally human nature is going to rebel against it, and as with the case of Lenin and Stalin, it just goes to death, misery, and starvation and hell on Earth is what they create instead of their happy little utopia.
And the bad part of, I feel sorry for people. I really do. I feel very, very sorry for people who, for whatever reason, have not achieved a level of success that they believe they should achieve. I truly do. It's not fun to, not be any good at a particular game. It's not fun to get D's in a subject because you just can't get it. And no, it doesn't feel good. And no, I don't like to see people unhappy. I truly don't. But I also understand that there is always going to be someone who knows more about something than you, and there's always going to be someone who knows less about it than you. You're never going to get to be omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent, and neither is any other human being. And unless and until you can change the reality and become one or all three of those, you cannot expect to achieve the kind of utopia most of the left political ideologies promise. You simply can't do it. Because even if you were able to keep people ignorant and afraid enough, sooner or later, something would slip through the cracks. Somebody would have an idea, and that idea would start people thinking and start people wondering, wait a minute, why can't I have that?
It's woven into the human spirit.
It's what brought down Soviet communism. It's what brought down the Roman Empire, mainly because the fertile ground for a religious philosophy that taught that this was not your only shot, that paradise awaited and death was not the end, was as revolutionary a concept in those times as our belief that government derives its just powers from the consent of the government.
Hugely radical.
And it found, in Christianity's birth, it found fertile ground among those with nothing left to lose.
Right.
The huge number of slaves and suppressed peoples. Whenever, and it always happens that way. Whenever you try to squish people into a mold so that they will all fit into a mechanistic society, this is one of the problems with all of the isms, Marxism, fascism, communism, socialism. They are all mechanistic views of humanity. It's the same mechanistic view that standard medicine has. Human beings are kind of like cars. We just tinker a little with the wiring or remove the part that isn't working and put in a new one, everything will be fine. That works with a washing machine, on wheel, a computer, a fish tank, for heaven's sake. But it doesn't work with the fish, and it doesn't work with people. And unfortunately, all of the left ideologies require that mechanistic view. they see the universe and our place in it as a cosmic machine. Even the eco-freaks who believe in the sentient planet, and let's worship Gaia, they still see it as a mechanism, as an interconnected
right.
thing of wheels and gears, as in the Lord of the Rings and Saruman. It's
right.
the same failing, the same misunderstanding of the nature of life itself, that somehow or other we can, if we just figure out the code, we can be God. And I
exactly.
don't think we're ever going to make it. I went through this when I was studying for my master's. The idea that human beings were evolving into godhood is part of transpersonal psychology. I thought it was crap then, and I know it's crap now.
Good for you.
I wasn't interested in our evolving toward godhood. I was interested in the fact that every single one of us was born with a need for spiritual expression. And I have always been fascinated by the many different ways as individuals, societies, that we have expressed it and sought it throughout history. That was my motivation, because I understand that people are not machines. We are not concatenations of test tube chemicals brought to life by a cosmic generator and set to walk about like mechanical dolls.
I'm going to let you wrap it up, and I'm going to go back to the chat room. And thank you so much for taking my call. It was a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to hear from you, my dear girl, and keep up the good fight out there, darling. And enjoy
thanks,
your mom. Weather. He did
that
108.
Okay, God bless.
Here. You too, sweetie. The whole question that we started tonight's show with the core curriculum and the idea of imposing national standards. There's nothing wrong with standards, ladies and gentlemen. We expect them when we're dealing with mechanisms, when we're dealing with weights and measures, when we're dealing with business practices in order that people can do business and expect to get value for value received. Standards are important. We seek them and we look for them. What we are dealing with here are not the standards. We are dealing with an imposition of something about which we know nothing, slipped in under cover of darkness, without the ability granted us by the Constitution to govern ourselves. We have had no say in the development of this. We have had no ability to examine it. Just like Nancy Pease, well, we have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. That's not what Congress was created to do. That's not what this nation was founded to promulgate. If you are going to have a nation of people who can govern themselves as individuals or as a society, we cannot allow this agenda of communion soup and false diversity to continue in its way. We cannot allow ourselves to be distracted by the sugar coating on the strychnine pill. We have to accept the fact that the only guarantees a free people have are those mentioned in the Declaration of Independence: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We can chase happiness in our own way. We need standards that prevent us from chasing happiness by willfully damaging or harming others or taking that which does not belong to us. That is why we have the rule of law. We need standards that say that liberty has responsibility. We need standards when it comes to life, in the sense that we cannot have our lives if we do not have some form of standard social behavior, social contract, to which we all affix our metaphorical signatures. That it isn't acceptable for me to walk into your house, take anything I see there, simply because I want to. We have to have standards of behavior that say that an immature human being cannot be made to do things it doesn't understand and doesn't want simply because it is too young or small to be able to say no. We require standards. We have to have them. But we need standards that protect society and also protect the individual freedom of its members. For 200 years plus, we have done that in this country. Not perfectly, and not always. We've made heinous mistakes. We have done evil things. But we have done everything we can to fix those mistakes and clean up the mess of the evil things. We do it all the time. We are not omnipotent, omniscient, or omnipresent. We cannot know the ramifications down the line of every movement we make, every breath we take. We can only try to do what is best for ourselves and those around us. We can only try to treat others the way we wish to be treated. The ideas of a classless society were not the ideas of we can eliminate the horrors of being human by eliminating class and by making everyone identical in their needs, wants, and possessions. Our forefathers wished to have a classless society in many ways. They did not want hereditary privilege. They did not want royal prerogatives. They did not want communion soup. They wanted self-determination and opportunity. They did the best they could, what they had and what they knew, to create a form of government that would ensure, as best they could, not being omniscient or omnipotent, the blessings of posterity, the blessings of freedom to themselves and their posterity. They tried to create a society in which the individual could blossom or wither according to his or her own nature, abilities, skills, and talents. They knew, as we know, that not everyone is going to be a concert pianist or a pro football player or president of the United States or an opera singer or a great farmer or a great electrician or a designer or an artist. But they wanted those who had those talents and skills to be able to exercise and develop them no matter into which family they were born or what their origins were. Weren't perfect. They were not omniscient or omnipotent. But they were good men who believed that they could create a better shot, a better way of doing things. They did a damned good job of it. I'm hoping, ladies and gentlemen, that you've enjoyed tonight's show, and I'm hoping you'll come visit us again for Patriot Education every Thursday night, and I hope that you'll visit us every night of the week for one of our www.patriotfamilies.com radio shows. On Sunday, Frank is Fed Up. On Monday, Constitution Hour. On Tuesday, Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday, Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday, Patriot. On Friday, for Foreclosure Help. And on Saturday, Breaking the Illusion. Visit our website. Give your opinions. Don't be worried about the fact that we may not agree with you. You may not agree with us. That's fine. It is one of the delights of living in this world, in this nation, in this time, that when we have a disagreement, with a little luck, we won't pick up a rock and bash each other's heads in over it. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what self-government is about. Being able to live together without descending to the wolf pack and the rule of the strong tyrannizing the weak. And if we can discuss, and if we can believe, and if we can try to do what is right and instead of what is easy, then I think we will succeed. I believe it. And whatever this country becomes, it will become good because we are the nation. Good night, everyone. Have a blessed evening.